Don't you wish that CPI data would have been a little bit hotter? Maybe we would have went up 110 handles instead of 55. Bond's thinking another thing here. We'll talk about that divergence. Dollar Tree giving a lot of those gains back from earlier in the year. Bitcoin making a new high. Tim Seymour at 845, and I don't want to talk about the Red Wings. It's a Wednesday, pre-market prep. Let's get fired up.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
Okay, a couple handles in the green here, 52.43 and a quarter, all-time closing high yesterday, not a all-time high, though. Buck pulling back a couple pennies here under 103. Bonds, a little bit of a slide here. We'll talk about that when Triple D comes on. Crude in the green by a buck 16, 78.72. Gold and silver modestly higher. Bitcoin officially on the rolling front month contract up 2K. Right here near 73,800. Let's bring in Triple D. Triple D, here we are on a Wednesday. Bad news is good news, and good news is bad news yesterday. Market really shrugged off that CPI data.
To a certain extent. Again, if you're looking at the S&P, you don't get the full picture of what the market's really doing. IWM was down most of the day. IWM could not get to the green. So you got 2,000 companies that are like, yeah. So we go back to the same thing. What do you do when the inflation is a little bit hot? You go to what works. Tech stocks, especially the AI ones. So it's actually not surprising the response. They started having AI day and they moved from everything else and they just couldn't stop buying NVIDIA, couldn't stop buying, you know, SMCI, AMD, IBM participating. It was the AI trade ripping higher yesterday. NVIDIA was up over $60, up here again today. Bank of America note putting an $1,100 price target on it this morning. So the party does continue here in NVIDIA. Ignore the 938 prints because, again, we have the FINRA tape dump here at 8 o'clock, which makes no sense. It's happening all the time now. Regulators, just do something about it, please. We want to know what's happening here, you know, at 8 to 8.05 when you're doing these tape dumps on these stocks, all these old trades or whatever the hell they are. I don't even know what these are, old trades. Like, I'm going 9.36. I didn't trade there yesterday. So I have no idea what all these little odd lot trades are on FINRA happening here at between 8 and 8.05. Would love to know, but there's no transparency in the FINRA tape. So nobody knows except the people who are putting those trades onto the tape. If you know something about them, let me know. But
Let's bring in AB. Yep, here.
Bring him in.
Hey, AB, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Good morning, y'all. Good morning to everyone out there watching. We got to talk some Tesla, I think, off the hop. I mean, Tesla trading lower this morning. And if you got some dueling analysts out there, Wedbush came out in defense of Tesla after Wells Fargo came out with a very damning note. Lowered its price target for Tesla. Dennis, you said this was the worst note you've ever seen on Tesla. Why is that?
Well, you want me to read it to you? I'll read it to
you. Not the whole thing, but yeah, give me this. Come on.
So the title, Wells Fargo, downgrade underweight. Growth company growth ain't looking so magnificent. Wells Fargo analyst Colin Langan downgraded Tesla from unequal weight to underweight, took the price target from 200 to 125. Reading from the note, we downgrade Tesla from equal weight to underweight. We see downside risk to volume as price cuts are having a diminishing impact. We see headwinds from disappointing deliveries and more price cuts, which likely drive negative EPS revisions. Our 2024 and 2025 EPS estimates are 32% and 52% below consensus, respectively, because they're lowering their EPS. Model 2 economics are likely tough as a mass market compact vehicle. Tesla already trades at 58 times consensus 24 EPS and 89 times their estimates. Premium to Magnificent 7 at 31 times. Tesla's growth in core markets has moderated with EU and China flattish in the LTM and US down since Q2. More concerning, the effect of price cuts are moderating with 2H volume up only 3%. Despite pricing that's down 5%, the cuts have resulted in a $6,800 $6,800 per car reduction in gross profits. We expect volumes to be flat in 2024 and down in 2025. In the wake of price cuts, our lower lease residuals, disgruntled customers, and the possible loss of the luxury brand premium. Brutal note. And I mean, that is a brutal note. That's going to be talked about a lot here on CNBC here today. We do have, we said it's battling analysts because we got Dan Ives, probably read this note, you know, and is like, what's up? I don't agree with any of this. So Wedbush, Dan Ives, who we've had on the show, we have a good relationship with Wedbush. Dan Ives been on the show and Joel's show quite a few times. He reiterates his outperform rating this morning, keeping his price target at 315. He says, we believe the stock is way overshooting on the negative front as the demand story for Tesla is more in stabilization mode heading to the rest of 2024. Price cuts are moderating. Battery cost per production is showing strong cost efficiencies and a Model 2 sub 30,000 vehicles on the roadmap for next year. In the near term, it's not roses and rainbows with demand sluggish for 1Q for first quarter. So that is, you know, where he agrees. The Berlin arson shutdown and noise around the Musk compensation packets. That said, we believe risk-reward is extremely compelling at these levels with the AI story and full self-driving making major strides at Tesla. And in our opinion, represents a valuation that could exceed $1 trillion as this next chapter of the Tesla growth story plays out in the field. So he's short-term bearish, long-term bullish, which is kind of where I'm at. I'm short-term bearish here too, and I bought a little bit more stock yesterday, and I think I'm going to dump that extra stock that I bought yesterday and just eat the 2% loss because the sentiment here is just, you know, too terrible in the short term here. I love, you know, the bot story, but that's too far away here. So I'm going to keep a little piece, keep my little piece, but it's not been a good story so far for Tesla.
Uh-oh, Joel, we got you on mute.
Putting aside both the bullish and the bearish argument and looking at the chart, I don't care which one you look at. If you look at the upper right one, the daily, it doesn't look good. Just hanging out near the lows of the move. Consolidating and hanging out near the lows of the move took out last month's low. Boom, monthly, you can see there. Now, you know, there's always Tesla. I don't want to say always, but the next monthly low is not until under 160. But if it is going there, it's going to grind and it's going to weave and bob. I would say in order to get a rebuild, you know, like a technical stance, this needs to get back above 175. That was last month's low and hold the bid. Now, we're not too far away from that area, but that's, I mean, technically, Dan and I have looked at that chart. I mean, that's just not a good looking chart, technically.
No, the chart doesn't look good. Short term just doesn't set up well. And you know what happens? And you know what I didn't consider is that there's a lot of analysts just have been bullish on this stock, and they're going to probably be revising their targets down. This is why it's hard to turn companies around. It's why it's hard to turn stocks around, because the analyst commentary here, one, you have overhead supply, people saying, please give me my money back. And then two is analyst commentary has been on the wrong side, so there's going to be revisions. This is basically what you're seeing from this Wells Fargo note. You know, they were neutral, 200. I don't know where they were before that. But, you know, analysts are readjusting, and they're seeing, you know, demand is sluggish here right now for EV. We've seen it with all the other EV companies. And, yes, I believe in the long run that there's going to be huge profits in these humanoids, but it's too far away. It's too far away, and that's where I'm wrong. You know, I tweeted yesterday, and I'm like, yeah, I want to bet on this. But you know what? It's 2 to 3 years out. This market, and this is where my thought process yesterday was wrong, short-termism is about this market. You know, show me the money now. They don't care 2, 3 years from now. They care about right now. And right now, demand sluggish on these cars. Valuation is high. So you put all that together, and you're like, no, you know what? I'm early. And if you're early, it's the same as being wrong.
100%. We'll see how that, you know, those analysts battling it out here on Tesla plays out. I mean, personally, I'm not in this stock. I've been kind of tentative to buy Tesla, but every single time I'll say that I feel like very bearish on Tesla, oh, this is it. It's going to slip to whatever. It starts rallying. So I think that's why I don't play it, is because I just have a track record.
It's a love stock. It's a love, you know, there. I mean, you'll look, I mean, it could go green today. I mean, you know, there's no, I mean, you also could be, if you want to be the ultimate contrarian and hop on the Dan Ives side, you know, you could say, oh man, this is fantastic. I will say the overall, I don't you know, the numbers and everything. The eyeball test, like on the road, there's more on the road. There are. And I mean, there's, you know, it's definitely has gained its market share now. Perhaps the price got way ahead of it. But you see the transition in the autos and, you know, it was Tesla, Tesla, Tesla. And then didn't we have an analyst come out bullish some of the more traditional automakers, Aaron?
Yeah, I think that was Adam Jonas from Morgan Stanley came out, and he's always bullish. Some of these other names. I mean, during the strikes last year in Detroit, he came out, and when everyone else was basically like, oh my God, these strikes are going to make the companies go out of business, he was like, buy Ford, buy GM. And he was vindicated on those. So let me try to find those.
We're slipping a little bit here now in the red after a pretty quiet pre-market overnight session, only a 12-point range. So right now we are losing that all-time closing high. Also, folks, as you know, tomorrow, Quadwitch, or not tomorrow, 2 days, we have Quadwitch expiration. A lot of jockeying for position ahead of that. Some wicked price action yesterday. The decline off the open, during the CPI number, revisited that level off the open, and then just shot out of a cannon. You know, rallied 60 handles off that intraday pre-market low.
Again, so that rally though, very driven by the same stocks that continue to drive the bus. NVIDIA's up $60 yesterday. I mean, everybody telling us the NVIDIA story is over. Here we are 2 days later. And the stock is up, you know, 60 points and not even that far from all-time highs. So we got to get, you know, it was a little bit overdone. It was due for a pullback. But let's look at that NVIDIA chart again. Kind of just pulling the exact same thing as SMCI did. You had the big whoosh, you know, the intraday reversal off the open, the key reversal on the charts. And everybody saying, yep, this is it. The bubble has burst. And then 2 days later, has it really burst? Or was it just a little bit of a shakeout, you know, to shake out those weaker hands once again?
Dennis, do you have your pen handy? Because I want you to write. I know you still got your full NVIDIA position.
I got the full NVIDIA position, yeah.
Yeah, I want you to write down 926.69.
Okay. That is the what's where we are closing. Right now. What do I got to do there? Tell me what to do.
I want to see it improve on that closing price today. That's the all-time closing high price. We've already taken back half of that move. So, yep. You know, I'm not looking at the 974 fluff high on Friday, but that old time, where you're marked, the best you've been marked on your sheets when you pull up your long-term portfolio at the end has been 926.69. I like those numbers just to see after, you know, see it falling $130 off the high. That's the number. I'm not going to focus, like I said, that 974 number, well, that was on an options expiration, but you have traded it over smartly in the pre-market. I just like to see it close above that level.
And there is that Bank of America note here today that's outperform. I don't know if you have that note, Aaron, if you want.
Yeah, they raised the price objective to $1,100. They cited, I mean, they're talking about the GTC preview, which is NVIDIA's event, which is taking place next week from next Wednesday through Friday, March 18th through 20th. They're calling it AI Woodstock is that event. And because that's where, you know, all the buzz is going to be at NVIDIA's event next week. I mean, the company's probably expected to, you know, be showing off all its, you know, new AI stuff and probably, you know, talking about some things that haven't been discussed yet. I worry, though, potentially that this is one of those kind of things that's going to run up into the event and then the actual events going on. And then, you know, maybe it's one of those buy, you know, sell the news type things. But obviously, you don't know what's going to happen in that event. So if NVIDIA announces XYZ technology or says they're partnering with this company, then it could be the exact opposite and take off. Either way, huge upgrade from Bank of America, $1,100 price target.
Yeah, it's a price target raise on Bank of America. They were already.
I tried to go to Woodstock, but I got stuck in a traffic jam on the freeway going to Woodstock.
Really?
What year was that?
I was.
Joel was at Woodstock back in the 70s.
I don't know because I knew he's.
I'm old, but I'm not that old.
Look, I knew Joel that you're too young.
Have you ever been to Woodstock?
No. I was a little yipper, man. That was in 69. So everyone knows I'm an old man, but, no, my, Not my parents would have let me go, but that's like a common joke that people say. Oh, I tried to go, but I got stuck in the traffic jam on the way there.
All right, well now I've got another joke in my bag. I can release. But I knew you were too young to go to the original Joel. But they did
the rerun. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, they did it different iterations. They did like a 99 one. Maybe I thought you were there. All right. Well, we did have some earnings this morning. Dollar Tree. Not very Dollar Tree trying to get, you know, be able to buy the stock for a dollar soon, maybe. Not exactly. It's $139, but down 7% this morning. Earnings were not good, and the company announced that it's closing about 1,000 stores across the country. And I don't know if you guys know this, but there are actually more dollar stores in the United States than like McDonald's. Like there are dollar stores everywhere.
So many of these things.
I know. And so when they announced that they're closing 1,000 of these, it sounds like a lot, but I wonder how many of that is their actual thing. I think, you know, here's kind of, I guess, the contrarian view. I actually think this is a sign of a strong economy because anytime we head toward a recession, dollar stores tend to do really, really well because people don't have as much money to spend to shop at Target, Walmart, et cetera. So they start going to Dollar Tree for essentials, groceries, whatever it is. So the fact that people are shopping at Dollar Tree less, to me, makes it seem like, okay, you know, people are still, I mean, everyone's complaining about inflation still, but I mean, people are still shopping at these other stores as opposed to the dollar stores. But Dollar General is set to report tomorrow too. So now the bar is a little bit lower for Dollar General. Either way, this stock's getting crushed this morning. But yeah, like I said, I mean, it could be a sign of a good economy.
I mean, we got bullish Dollar General back at $100. And I was like saying, you know, it's gotten cheap enough that I was going to buy it at $100. It kissed it. I never did. It got to 101, didn't quite get to the $100 level. Now it's up at 160. I mean, it's going to report here Thursday, Dollar General. Talking Dollar Tree. The one concern here is, especially these dollar stores, is you got to think margins are getting squeezed a little bit here, Joel. I mean, you know, you got labor costs. People want raises.
Yeah.
You've got your product costs coming in, like all that stuff they're trying to sell for a buck. Or they've broken the buck, though, haven't they? Like, I know when you come to the Dollar Tree in Canada, I think it's like a buck 50 or something. It's not a dollar. Have they broken the buck in the States, too? Or is everything at Dollar Tree still a buck? Asking because no, I don't go to the dollar.
It's certainly not. It ceased to be a real dollar store years and years and years ago. I mean, I actually really like the dollar stores because if you're going for certain things, like I say, you need new like pens. Like I go and just grab a pack of pens there, whatever it is, and it's easy and cheap. But yeah, definitely things there are. I would venture to say the vast majority of things you can find there are more than a dollar, and it's not even close.
Yeah, well, and again, Family Dollar different, you know, Family Dollar, Dollar General, and obviously Dollar General, I believe, is the one that bought Family Dollar. You know, some of these sell groceries, they sell different things. I think Dollar Tree was the one that always, everything was a dollar, and they're telling me it's $1.25. I don't know if it's everything like you said, or if there's other things in there. It's just, I've got to think, though, and you set your price to sell, and you go through the inflationary environment that we went into, I just got to think logically that the margins are going to be squeezed. And EPS, 255. And as much as we say inflation is dead, we know by going to the stores, you know, going places, that inflation is still very much alive. You know, how they calculate it and what you're actually really seeing are two very different things. And I'm seeing it still all over the place, you know, like, you know, you go into the superstore yesterday and I'm like, prices are up on so many different things all the time. So I don't know how they calculate it. I challenge how they calculate it. And I still see inflation everywhere. It's not where it was 2 years ago. I agree. It's come down a bit, but there is still inflation.
I was trying to find, I know we like poo-poo the analyst moves and stuff, but I remember when this thing was back around 100, 110, and you were hawking it, Dennis, and there was an upgrade, or I'm looking at Pro for a price target raise. It looks like this person at Truist seems to follow it the most, but it had, this was this gap up day. I remember it moved on that and kind of took my eye off it. Came back and filled the gap. That's previous price action now. Looks like they already bought the dip a little bit. You're off the pre-market low of 135.06. So you're right back. I like that area. I like the 135, 136 area for today. You had 2-3 lows in that area and also the pre-market low. The bottom of yesterday's range is way up there at 146.69. But I don't know, maybe a little early to buy the dip, but this has really had a nice run off the October low, just like a lot of other stocks. S&P still slipping here, having a hard time staying green.
Yeah, maybe finally realizing that CPI report came in hot yesterday. Took a while. We did have a couple other stocks report earnings this morning. Nothing huge, but Petco, ticker WOOF. Yeah, I guess you guys are heading to Petco.
That's still a stock.
Yeah, to buy a lot of your pet needs. Not only is it still a stock, but the company did $1.67 billion worth of sales in Q4, beat the estimates. EPS came in at 2 cents in line, gave guidance pretty much in line, announced a new CEO and the leadership take-up. Yeah, stock is up about 10% this morning. I mean, tiny stock. It's only about, $3. I think Chewy has come in as a bigger dog in this battle and been eating a lot of its lunch recently. But either way, good pop here for Petco if you're in on that.
Chewy may be eating the lunch, but there isn't much lunch to be had, because if you look at both of these stocks here over the course of the last 2 years, these are epic disasters. What? Chewy over $100 in 2021 is $18. WOOF in 2022 was 20. Well, in 2021, right at the beginning when it came out, actually at the beginning of 2022, came out $31. It's $2 here. Down a cool 90% on your money in WOOF. Down a cool 85% on your money in Chewy. Better places to be.
I don't understand. I mean, because there was the huge bump during COVID of people buying dogs and all this stuff. I mean, I don't know if,
they're going to the pet store now, or they're getting in on Amazon. And
Amazon.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that was
valuation. It's all valuation. Like, these things were just trading at ridiculous valuations the whole time. Like Chewy, it's Chewy's PE right now is 599. Its
still?
Forward PE is 72. The forward PE is 72. I mean, people were paying 100 times earnings for a dog food company. You deserve to lose your money. Next.
Yeah, and I mean, that was Chewy's whole thing, was that it was able to take on Amazon and do better than Amazon. But I guess over time, maybe people are just ordering their food and stuff off, pet food and whatnot off Amazon.
That was the internet bubble again, Chewy.
The Chewy.
Stocks like that. It was exact pets.com. It was a replay. I don't know if it's going. Maybe at a certain point there's value here, but it won't be for me.
Lisa's doing her best. We get about daily packages from Chewy. So,
y'all buying off of it. But again, it's all about valuation. I mean, you can't be paying. What was Chewy's value at the peak? It's still worth $7 billion, Joel. So we can basically, multiply that times 8. You pay $60 billion for a dog food company? You got to use common sense sometimes with investing. Sometimes it's about common sense. At the end of 2020, there was no common sense whatsoever. Like, remember that, one person who had the video that went viral, and they were like two 25-year-olds, and they were saying they quit their jobs
because
they do is I buy the stock, and then when it goes up a little bit, I sell it. And then I make enough money to pay all my bills. And they do the whole video on this. And this is how simple it is, folks. Day trading, you just buy the stock and sell it higher. And then you just make money. Well, that is the simple game. But you know what? 2021 proved that it wasn't as easy as you think it is.
All right. Well, Dennis, can I interest you in another company that's doing a leadership shakeup that has a little bit more of a reasonable valuation?
Yeah, please. Yes.
That'll be Triple M. We didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday, but 3M announced a new CEO. William Brown is the new CEO. Shares got a bump higher yesterday, and looks like we're still trending higher this morning. And I mean, at Triple M, I mean, it's one of these stocks that I've been looking at for a while, just as a, potential dividend play. Price to sales of 1.6, forward PE of 10. Of course, you had a lot of, problems hanging overhead with this company with different lawsuits and all this stuff. But still there? I thought they settled the big earplug lawsuit, but I'm sure there are other ones. I have no clue. But I mean, is now the time to potentially get in on Triple M?
This lawsuit ever going to go away? Really? Is it ever going to go away? We say, oh, we're getting past it. We think we're getting past it. And then for whatever reason, it's just back at us again. So I'm just too scared to come in here for this stock. The valuation has been reasonable on 3M for a long time, but I don't know. I can't quantify what these lawsuits are going to be. I mean, this thing trades 10 times earnings. So the valuation's ridiculously low, but the cloud of, I don't know what it is. I don't, can't value it. And you know what? We've been talking about this for 2 years and the stock has only went lower. And it's only went lower, Joel. You know, we were talking about it being reasonably valued at 150 when it was P15, but I'm like, I can't buy it because I can't quantify. Now it's 100. So I don't know. Like some people said, the company could go bankrupt because of this. I'm not a lawyer. I can't like tell you what these, you know, lawsuits are going to add up to. And some people are saying, oh yeah, we're getting passive. But then there's more lawsuits. And then they settle with one person and they get millions of dollars. And there's thousands of these lawsuits. So I can't quantify what the value of those lawsuits is. That's why 3M is just a no touch for me. I just can't trade it. Like, well, maybe you could trade it, but I just can't own it.
Can you tell me where the AI is in tape and glue? And also how you can lose weight from 3M. I mean, it's out of favor. And stocks out of favor.
So out of favor.
Yeah, out of favor. I would just say we've looked at a lot of charts this morning. This one, the upper right, is your best setup chart I've seen on of everything we've looked at. You had a high on the gap down day of 1.0065, right? And then yesterday, well, the high right here on this day was 1.0086. Your high yesterday, 1.0085. Where are you going to go if you can clear that level? But right now, it's major resistance. I'd keep an eye on that. But if it starts to get into the gap area, yeah, then there's some room on the upside. It's had these different gap up higher opens, and it's faded a lot over the last, you know, I can remember over the last couple of years. But let's see if we can get in 101, and then things are wide open on the upside. Wow, that gap's up to nearly 108 triple M.
Got it. Moving along here, we also had Williams Sonoma report earnings this morning. Let me go ahead and get those numbers pulled up. Whoa, hold on 1 second. What's that?
Have we got them, the Williams Sonoma numbers?
I thought they were due this morning. I'm going into Pro right now.
They're late. They're not out yet. Okay, that's why the stock's just sitting here waiting. The stock's sitting here at 240.
Come on, it's an hour before open, and we don't have the thing. You did have a few analysts. RBC Capital maintains outperform on Williams Sonoma, raises price target to 261. Wells Fargo maintains equal weight on Williams Sonoma, raises price target to 240. So some analysts taking a bullish stance ahead of the retailer, or for the retailer ahead of the earnings report. So when we get those numbers, I'll make sure we have them here. Joel, before the show started, we were talking a little bit how we saw some divergence yesterday between bonds and stocks. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that today because, you know, I don't really follow the bond market too much. And I think you can, you know, help explain this to me a little bit.
Yeah. Now, Dennis, I can hop in on this one, too. I mean, you got the higher than expected CPI data, right? And that's definitely not good for the bond market. And usually the bond, the TLT and the bonds and the stock market go together. You've had a lot of divergences this year. But I just look at the pop that you had in both the TLT and the U.S. And the 30-year bond. And it's gotten back half of this move, but it's struggling. And, you know, they say the bond market's usually right. But, you know, what Dennis said about going into, you know, the other stocks that aren't as sensitive, interest rate related. You saw the move in the in NVIDIA. But once again, the IWM not participating. So we'll see. Bond market down again today. We'll see if the stocks choose to follow the bonds today.
It's weighing on the stocks. It is weighing on the stocks for sure. I bought a little bit more TLT yesterday, nibbling into a little bit further. I still think long-term rates, we're getting to a point where rates have peaked. So I don't think we're going to start tanking and go to 90, 85. I think once we start thinking about looking out to June, we're going to start thinking again. The wild card is the inflation data. I mean, that's what, you know, the boogeyman still is in the room.
Yeah, but look what we did yesterday off a higher hot number. We had a hot number yesterday. Look, and the market ripped. Absolutely.
And again, Joel, I keep saying this. We got to take off the S&P blinders.
The S&P.
We got to take it off because the IWM did not have a good day yesterday. It was down on the day. 2,000 companies were down yesterday. They popped towards the end of the day, but it wasn't like, oh, they're just blasting. And the media will say, look how good the stocks did because of NVIDIA, because they went back to what works. It's logical. It actually makes perfect sense what they did yesterday. They sold everything interest rate sensitive off the hop, IWM. They were selling the banks down. They were jumping back. And then by the end of the day, they started buying everything. But early in the day, it was starting to make sense. And then where do they go? The AI trade. Because you know what? NVIDIA didn't care about lower rates. NVIDIA's rocking no matter what. So it doesn't need lower rates. So you can see that separation happening. But IWM did not have a great day yesterday. So we can say it shrugged it off. It really didn't. It really didn't shrug it off yesterday. So the S&P shrugged it off and QQQ shrugged it off. QQQ shrugs it off because we got NVIDIA ripping higher and we got, you know, so many other tech components ripping higher. Microsoft even Apple was up at one point yesterday.
Yeah, Microsoft had a big day too.
Microsoft had a huge day yesterday. I mean, why? It's because tech went up and tech worked the entire 2023 when in 2022 even. Tech was, you know, working to a certain extent at the end of 2022, 2023. So just understanding those relationships in itself. When I see a hot number, I don't think sell S&P. I think sell IWM. When I see a hot number, but then give a perspective. We were a tick. It wasn't like, oh my gosh. It was a tick.
It was on one number. The other ones came in line. And then the one, you know, core CPI year over year came in at 0.1% higher. So I don't think, you know, I mean, the IWM probably would have went up if it came in lower than expected, but I don't think the inflation number was so hot that now all of a sudden we're talking about rate hikes and all this stuff, which is what I think you saw happen yesterday. Was the
a little bit, yeah.
He was basically saying, okay, like it was hot, but we're not going to see rate hikes based on this. Now, if next month's CPI comes in and it's, you know, 0.3 of a higher and it's trending back up, but where it's leveling out, I think people or the market isn't too worried about rate hikes at this point.
They're not hiking. There's no way. It's just a matter of whether they push, you know, down. They push, you know, the rate cuts further back. You know, we thought March, now we're talking June. If inflation data still comes in a little bit hot, maybe they push it back further. And that's not good. Like solar, you know, look at those stocks yesterday there, Joel. They had a really bad day. I mean, ENPH is down huge. Like you want to think about, you almost got to rank them. So traders, take, you know, write down these names on your list. You know, when you see a hot CPI data, the first sector you sell is solar. Solar absolutely needs lower rates. We've talked about this for years. They're all financed plays, expensive stuff to put on. The projects get killed when higher rates come because it's all just, you know, doing your internal rates of return. And the IRRs are going to be lower when those rates start coming higher. And they don't, at a certain point in time, they just kill the projects and they don't make sense. So when the financing is an issue, that's what you want to. So first thing you're getting rid of is solar, you know, when higher rates are coming. Now, I'm not saying they are. TLT really didn't get killed yesterday. It wasn't like the TLT was down $5 yesterday. We were down 30 cents. So it wasn't really like, we don't want to, you know, get to a point where we're saying, oh my gosh, inflation's back. Inflation's always been here. Inflation never went away. It's a matter of, you know, how they calculate it. And the only thing we can use is how they calculate it. They calculate it in their fishy ways. But and regardless, their fishy ways, it's coming down. So, you know, but if you're looking just at pure interest rate plays, first solar, you know, autos don't usually good, you know, banks are sensitive, especially regional banks are sensitive. We know because of all the problems they've had. So they have a little bit rough. And, you know, the market kind of did what it should have yesterday. Regional banks were down. Solar was, you know, beat up pretty good, but it was a tick. It wasn't like we were like, oh my gosh, you know, this is so, the inflation's just back. It was a tick higher.
And I've noticed yesterday too. I mean, you had the Qs close up about, you know, 1.5%. Of course, a lot of that was based on NVIDIA's strength. But Apple, I mean, closed in the green, but only by about, 0.2%. So Apple kind of underperforming still these other Magnificent Seven stocks. We talked about it yesterday, Apple. And I mean, I at some point, it's got to be time to come in and buy Apple. But from the chart, from what I'm seeing in terms of underperformance, I mean, Dennis, do you think this is still going to be a type of reverse pair trade with NVIDIA where where NVIDIA's up, Apple's down and vice versa?
It's happening and it's tradable and it's an actionable trade. And why is it really actionable? Yeah, algos haven't even figured that out yet. The algos, everybody thinks they're so smart, they're slow because it takes somebody who's programmed the algos to figure that out. Maybe they listen to her show, figure it out, then you got to program it in. But I can tell you from the last 2 weeks, Apple is moving inversely with NVIDIA very well. NVIDIA had a rip and roar and rally yesterday. Apple was up early in the day and then they started to sell it. Wow. So nothing is perfect, but you can clearly see if you look at the longer term chart, NVIDIA moving higher, Apple moving down. They're just doing separation within that Magnificent Seven. It's ETF effects. They're going to buy Microsoft, and it's probably Microsoft even more than NVIDIA, because Microsoft's moving with the AI plays, and Microsoft's so heavy in the XLK, and Apple's so heavy in the XLK. If they're going to rip Microsoft higher, well, they got to sell something, so then they sell Apple down. But keep an eye. You know, Microsoft, NVIDIA definitely inversely correlated, have been for a long time, Microsoft and Apple inversely correlated because of that XLK and that ETF effects. Like, and to give you a perspective, I believe in the XLK, I think it's like 22%. Let's just bring up the actual numbers. It's like 20% Apple, 20% Microsoft. Like that XLK is 40% those two stocks, wow, which is incredible to think about. And XLK, you can say, oh, what's that? Who cares? It is widely traded. Like there's some volume. What was the volume yesterday on XLK, Joel?
Oh yeah, it's very active. Just hanging out here near the highs. It's had its biggest volume day.
Do you have the volume from yesterday?
Yeah, 9 million, almost 9 million.
Here's 9 million shares. 22% Microsoft, 18% Apple, 40% those two stocks, and the other seven's NVIDIA. So I mean, you got 50% on the market and three stocks right there on the XLK. That affects these ETF effects are real, folks. So when you see Microsoft and NVIDIA ripping higher, and they don't have Apple as an AI play, they usually hit it. That's why the inverse correlation exists. If we didn't have ETFs, a lot of these relationships wouldn't exist. But they do, because we do have ETFs, and these effects are real, folks.
And NVIDIA just fell a cool $20 there while we've been talking on the show. Hit from a pre-market eye.
I don't know if something came out. I'm wondering if somebody said something.
If someone said something somewhere? Yeah,
well, maybe it's an analyst commentary or something.
Maybe we'll find out. Or I mean, now it's the third biggest component in the S&P. So if they're going to smack the S&P, they're going to smack NVIDIA. Now I really even like that all-time closing high level even better at 926.69. I know we did exceed it in the pre-market, getting all the way almost to 940. But, man, that's a volatile puppy there, isn't it?
Funny.
it's always good out there if you, you know, buy low, sell high. It's not as good, though, when you're a company and you start selling high. And Coinbase announced a private offering of $1 billion of convertible senior notes while the stock is trading. I mean, I don't know what we're at, like 2-year highs in this stock, basically the highest we've been since the IPO. And you also have some directors, some insiders selling at around 250. So, I understand on their part, like they, you know, they're seeing their stock at the highest point in 3 years. They might want to take some of their profits. They've been in it. But again, if you're holding Coinbase here, probably not the news you want to see. And Coinbase is trading down about 2% pre-market on this news.
It was down more last night. They really hit it down like 240. Like these algos just hammer things sometimes, you know, and here you got a stock that's in a relentless uptrend. Here you got Bitcoin that just seemingly goes up every day, and Bitcoin probably due for a cool off period. I mean, it's just been an incredible run in Bitcoin. Long still Bitcoin. And like I was looking at my Bitcoin position, Joel, last night. It's the second largest position in my long-term portfolio. Why? Because it's grown so much. It didn't start that way. But I'm like, it's almost 5% of my long-term portfolio of Bitcoin here now. You know, and I started like, oh, you want to just keep, you know, it's doubled basically. You're talking about Bitcoin doubling what? Like 3 months, 4 months? Where were we? 36,000 like 3 months ago, weren't we?
Yeah. For not less than that. I mean, after that, this was when they came out with all the ETFs and it kind of looked top heavy and went to 40. So it was at 40K just back on January 23rd and just hit a fresh high on the rolling front month contract today. So very strong move, even just since I guess it was mid-January since you've had that move in Bitcoin. Well, what's it going to make you to sell some? I mean, move your stop up, psychological stop, hold out for 100K.
I don't even think about it. Like, I'm full hodler mode because I don't even think about this. I was just looking at it last night like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, I can't believe it's 5% of my portfolio. I'm like, what the hell happened? And again, you know, like, I have other things. It's not like that's all my wealth. It's 5% of my, like, you know, my retirement portfolio, my correct stocks. You know, I have real estate. I have all other, a solar project myself. I have a lot of other things. But of the stocks that I own, I was like, I treat it like a stock. I'm like, it's the second biggest one. I'm like, it's right there. And NVIDIA was right there too. I mean, they're both like, and again, they've just grown to that. Like usually when I add a stock to my long-term portfolio, it's usually 1-2% of it. I don't go like 10% in. I'm not just 10 stocks. At a certain point in time, you know, I've had over 100 stocks in my long-term portfolio. I don't have that many anymore. I think I have like 35 or 40, but usually I'm adding like, if I really like the position, I'll put like 2%, maybe 3% of my money in it. You know, not crazy, but you know, some of these have just grown. Like NVIDIA's grown to almost 5% because it's doubled. It started as like a 2%er 3 months ago, and then it's just doubled. And at a certain point in time, then they just become too weighted. But it's funny, like you think about taking some profits and stuff. I don't know why I don't think about taking the profits in Bitcoin, but I don't. I think I'm just hodling now. I think I just got the hodler blood in me.
Is there a halving or something coming up soon?
Yes, there is. I don't really know what that means, but there is.
Yeah, okay.
You got the fundamentals there, baby. You got to look at the fundamentals of Bitcoin before you buy at 73,000. I got to admit, I wasn't super bullish on that, on the demand for these ETFs from Bitcoin, because in my head I was like, why, you know, anyone out there who really wants to buy the Bitcoin ETF could just go buy Bitcoin. But I saw this on Twitter yesterday. Yesterday marked the highest Bitcoin ETF net inflow ever, totaling over $1 billion. BlackRock experienced an inflow of $849 million. And this chart shows the net flow of the Bitcoin ETFs. As you can see, since they've been around since early February, there's only been 2 days where there's been a net outflow from these ETFs. And I mean, it's just ramping up more and more. $1 billion yesterday, the highest. I think about, you know, again, like what's going to be the Max Payne scenario. And it's not this easy to make money in the markets if everyone's just loading up on these Bitcoin ETFs and they go up every day. So I have a feeling there's going to be some sort of reckoning in the short term. I'm not saying Bitcoin's going back down to 20,000 or something like someone said in the chat, but just that, you know, there's got to be a pullback here at some point, right?
I think so. And I think you're buying those pullbacks. The big reason, like, think about me, you know, where I was 5 years ago saying, well, Bitcoin is nothingness, you know, like, why would I invest in nothingness? And now I'm a hodler. Like, think about if other people, you know, with my mindset, like, think about Jamie Dimon, you know, he went from like, I'd fire somebody if they bought Bitcoin and, you know, worked for JP Morgan. And now he's like, well, you can do what you want with your money, you know, like, you can just see slow movement to, wow, this is actually real. And maybe we're all going to be fooled. Maybe I'm going to lose 5% of my net of my, you know, retirement account here because I've got 5% Bitcoin here now. But I feel like there's more people to come here. And I feel like the ETF effects, like the ETF is just starting here, like just starting to get people interested in it. Like you can, it's so convenient. Like now you can put this, you know, in an IRA probably, Joel. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's ways to like think about it that way too. And that's, you know, one of the main reasons, because we had the Bitcoin ETF in Canada before you guys had it in the US. And I was like, oh, I can add it to my retirement account, my RSP, they're called in Canada, you know, within this BITO. I'm like, well, that's a pretty cool, you know, tactic to do it. And they own physical Bitcoin. So I just think there's this movement here that is maybe going to continue to accelerate. And the younger generation is real believers in this stuff. So I just don't think it's just going away. And I don't think it's going to fizzle out. And I think there's going to be more investors that are interested here. I think it's going to 100,000. I don't know, like it's going to 1 million. Kathy Wood says 1 million. You know, everybody's talks. Nobody has a crystal ball. But I think short term here, it's still higher. I think you're going to get a pullback. I think you're buying those pullbacks.
We haven't heard from Kathy lately. She'd be doing, you even get her her news, her updates anymore. I remember when I don't get them. But
again, you know, she's just become irrelevant, you know, to obviously Mark Chaykin's point that he said on this show 2 years ago or a year ago. He said she's become irrelevant. He's absolutely correct. She's become irrelevant. She does gets very little airtime anymore. The reason she's become irrelevant is she's one of the worst money managers that have, you know, been out there. She's massively underperformed the queue since her inception. So we don't even poo-poo her anymore. We don't even talk about it. She's not worth talking about. She paid way too much for a lot of companies. She got Tesla right and everything else wrong.
Yeah, my thing, though, is just with the, you know, Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ETFs. I mean, you take a look at yesterday, again, $1 billion of inflow into these ETFs. Without Bitcoin, wouldn't that money would be going to work other places. And if it was buying ETFs of, you know, the S&P 500 and then Vanguard's, you know, buying the shares of the company, and that money gets put into those companies and that are producing something that have this economic value into Bitcoin. To me, I get that there's utility out there, but it seems at the end of the day, like a speculation vehicle. People buy it because they think it's going up and they want to make money off of it. So again, like, I don't think it's going anywhere, but I would probably venture to say that that money would be doing more in the economy if it were going to other places. And I know there's going to be a lot of people in the chat and a lot of crypto bros that disagree with me. But again, I just wonder, like, long term, what effect that has. Moving on, we do have other stocks set to report after the close today. Lennar, one of the biggest home builders. Yeah, I mean, we talked about it earlier that big ticket items aren't selling as much, but I mean, people still got to be building homes, right? We still don't have enough homes in the U.S. for everyone.
I'm long and ahead of the report. You know how I like to buy stocks ahead of reports. I will sell it before the report. I'll probably sell it this morning.
Man, right up at all-time high, and even, you know, with the, you know, just think if interest rates do start to come down with these things. I mean, Lennar at an all-time high, and did Warren buy one and then kind of scalp out of it a little bit? Was it Lennar or was it KBH? There was one we thought, like, oh boy, Warren bought it a little high.
He's in one. D.H. Horton. Which one's Chad? Help us out here. Which one's Warren's in one? I think Warren's in one of them. I think it's DHI.
I think you're right.
I'm guessing, though. I think it's DHI is in. Chad will know.
I'm pulling up his portfolio right now.
Chad will get it. I'm pretty sure it's DHI. That's just from my memory, though. My memory is not always that great. Warren is DHI. That's what Jay Spinner says. Spinner says DHI. I think he's right.
Now look at these things, all-time high.
Well, they've performed in that rising interest rate environment. What we underestimated was that nobody would sell their houses and the demand would stay up. I mean, that's what the Fed underestimated. That's why inflation was sticky, because, you know, the consumer wasn't strapped for cash when he started raising rates, because they were all locked in at 2.5% because of the stupid regional banks. The stupid regional banks basically saved us from going into a recession, at least in the U.S. Canada went into a recession.
Warren does own Lennar, and I'm not seeing D.R. Horton in here.
Lennar? Okay.
He does own Lennar? Maybe he sold the DHI.
He doesn't own, I mean, a ton of Lennar compared to his other holdings.
We know Apple's his biggest holding. What's his second? Like, what's his top five? Do you have them?
Yeah, Bank of so percentage of his portfolio, 43%, I'm rounding here, 43% is in Apple. So that's a huge position. Over 10% of his portfolio is in Bank of America. More than 5% of his portfolio is in Chevron. More than 5% of his portfolio is in Coca-Cola. Where's Oxy? He's got to have.
What about Oxy?
He actually, from his portfolio perspective, he's got more of weighting into Chevron than he does Oxy, which I'm surprised by. I thought, you know, he had more Oxy than that. Kraft Heinz only makes up 3% of his portfolio, but he owns more than 20, or Berkshire owns about 27% of the total. That's their stake in Kraft Heinz. So still, I mean, that one's been one of the biggest dogs for Buffett over the past 5 years has been Kraft Heinz. And you saw Michael Burry, some other value investors get in this stock. But again, Buffett owns more than, in terms of the companies he has the biggest stake in, Kraft Heinz is up there, but still only making up about 3% of his portfolio.
No Bitcoin yet.
No Bitcoin.
Charlie's gone. Charlie was the Bitcoin hater.
Yeah.
That's a joke. It's not.
I don't think Buffett's.
He's not going to invest in Bitcoin. He invests in cash flow. You don't get any cash flow. So, let's look at Berkshire Hathaway, the stock. And we had that ridiculous run where it was seemingly up every single day and it could not stop. And then remember the one day where said it. I'm like, it's trading. I think I shorted it in the pre-market.
You did.
It was trading
you
up
did.
20 bucks
I remember the scenario.
On their earnings. And I'm like, this is a bloody fund. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing. I even said it. I'm like, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Berkshire Hathaway up. The market was down and Berk's up 20 points because they reported record earnings. It's Berk. This is not like, you know, they own a whole pile of companies there, a pile of companies that are going to follow the stock market overall. So overall, it should still track the stock market to a certain extent. It was like 440 pre-market. You won't see that. Open at 430, and then they just tanked her down that day. 408. That was the key reversal of key reversals.
Right.
That's where everybody's like, oh, Burke can go down. And then we've kind of been in this little mini downtrend for a while. Is Burke starting to show some life? I'm actually got a, I think I got a small day trading position in there. Yeah, it's just
better. I mean, it came in. I remember that. I mean, it traded. I can remember that. I think it traded up to like 445.
Crazy. Up 25 bucks. I've never seen that.
Yep. And I remember we and I remember you came in and you like came in. I think you like you shorted it immediately. And
yeah, it was like a 430. I didn't get the top, but I was like, this is the dumbest thing I ever did. I just shorted it. I mean, sometimes that's shorting all time highs. You ask for trouble when you do that, but
it already had pulled off. Yeah.
I missed Amex, by the way. Amex makes up 10% of
American Express, yeah.
Yeah, or he owns a 10% stake in American Express, makes up about 10% of his portfolio. Sorry, owns a 21% stake in American Express. So bullish the credit cards, bullish Bank of America, bullish Apple. And again, I mean, when we were talking about Apple earlier, someone talked about Buffett's sales in Apple. That is going to be, I think, like the canary in the coal mine to watch with Apple. If Buffett starts selling more, we've talked about it on this show, that you will see some weakness there. But as of right now, again, it's still by far and away his biggest position.
You know where? Go ahead,
Dennis. I got my tweet from February 26th. So I tweeted out, I said, Burke.B hit 440 this morning, plus 6%. In my 25 years of trading, I've never seen Burke.B up 6% when SPY was trading down. And then later I said, the dumbest of dumb money was buying Burke.B at 440 this morning. And that's the truth. That was the dumbest of dumb money.
Just think if Warren met, now there's a stock, and I'll let you guys figure it out. I'm not going to pull up the symbol. There was a stock that he bought, and he was in it for just a little. He wasn't in it for very long at all. And he got out of it and he had a pretty good stake. And at the time, we were like, there was like a macro. This is going to give it away. There was a macro concern going on. Do you remember what he bought a big chunk of? This must have been like 3 or 4 months ago and he didn't hold it for very long.
Hewlett Packard?
Nope.
TSM.
Yep, exactly. Remember that?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
He bought some TSM and he got shooken out of it, eh?
Yeah.
Man, what a monster that's been now.
Yep.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't come as any surprise, right, that TSM, they're the ones doing the actual manufacturing for these chips. And I think they work with basically every big chip designer out there. So NVIDIA, AMD, you know, when they go and design these chips, that TSM's doing the actual manufacturing. Of course, like you mentioned, the geopolitical concerns about China and Taiwan have been what's weighed on this stock, but it looks like now people are shaking those concerns off, and we're trading what, around all-time highs on TSM?
Oh yeah, we did. It was look at this as a potential catch-up trade, and boy
it's been trading right with NVIDIA, like perfectly correlated. Now there's a group that just goes with NVIDIA, and Taiwan Semiconductor is one of them too. These correlations will break down, folks. Like, never marry a correlation. Unless it's like, you know, like Bank of America versus Citigroup. Like, you never marry these new correlations because they break down. But, you know, right now, Taiwan and NVIDIA are like tied together at the hip. You know, Taiwan is up this morning, giving some back. As soon as NVIDIA, like, look at the Taiwan's even this morning, Joel. See the movement in the morning here?
Yeah.
You know, and then yesterday, you know, trading higher. There you go. Look at NVIDIA and bring up NVIDIA and look at, see the same move straight down. NVIDIA, they are tied together. Boom. Identical.
Yeah, and I mean, with Taiwan, I said this, you know, back when all those concerns were going on. Like, one of my things is I'll always bet against if there's like this big potential thing coming where people are, okay, China's going to invade Taiwan or whatever. It's like, okay, at the end of the day, China's our biggest trade partner. If China invades Taiwan, they know that, you know, sanctions are on the way, potentially some military action, and whatever it is, whatever that huge potential risk is, this event, I'm always going to kind of bet against that just because I think things are going to continue to stay the way they are more than you'll have this huge fundamental shift. And obviously you have these black swan events, things like that do happen. So there are risks out there. I'm not downplaying that, but I'm just saying I was never quick to hop on the, oh my God, this invasion of Taiwan is imminent. Of course, there still is tension there. There still is the possibility for that. But I think you've seen a lot of that subside now over the past year, where I kept seeing, I don't know if you remember this, Dennis, but I kept seeing like every single morning new headlines of, oh, China's got these ships out, you know, circling Taiwan and stuff like that. And it just seemed like a lot of, you know, people really scared about something that, you know, maybe or maybe was not going to happen. And again, I'm on the side of like, well, whatever the status quo is probably more likely to continue than this huge event that's going to change our whole relationship with China. So I wouldn't be too worried about the geopolitical risk right now. But obviously,
and I'm with you. Like, I was one that was that last year worrying about the geopolitical risk keeping me out of China. And you know what? It worked out because China's still sitting down here not too far from the lows. But the geopolitical risk is a lot lower than it was, I think, right now.
And I'm wrong.
And I wonder, like, is it Baba's time? Is it Baba's time? I bought a little Baidu. I have a little bit of Baidu in the long-term portfolio. It's actually been all over the place. I was up, and then I'm down. Now I'm back up in it again. Is it Baba's time? CNBC Fast Money, all four of them last night like it. That scares me sometimes, but we love Tim Seymour. He comes on this show.
I was going to say, I thought it was Baba's time until I saw that, and then it had me second guess it. I do own Baba, and it's for the same exact reason I'm talking about, because people talk about the risk with China. We're, you know, moving away from China. But like I just mentioned, at the end of the day, we are still China's biggest trade partner. China is still the United States' biggest trade partner.
They need us.
Do I think that relationship is more likely to continue over the next 5 years or completely, you know, get tarnished and go away? I think it's more likely to continue. So that's why I've been kind of ignoring those risks and buying Baba. And what I was going to say is sometimes I'm wrong with that theory that like, oh, things are just going to stay normal, because a couple years ago I was saying that, oh, I don't think there's any chance that Russia actually invades Ukraine, you know, and obviously wrong there. So of course there is a possibility there's more reckoning with China, and where you know, our relationship continues to trend in the wrong direction. But again, I think it's more likely that if we're doing this show in 5 years, we're still talking about China as our biggest trade partner, and not like that we're not doing any business with them. So I've been buying Baba, but like I said, I mean, having them all bullish on CNBC doesn't make me feel any better.
We did get some
news over, I believe overnight or this morning, that Putin said that, you know, he unleashed the nukes if he needed to, if their sovereignty was threatened. But market was still trading up besides those comments.
And again, if you watch that interview with Tucker Carlson, and I know the media couldn't cover it because Tucker left and, you know, the whole boycott Tucker Carlson here, but I found it very interesting. And after I watched that, I felt a lot more comfortable that nuclear war wasn't imminent. Like, again, you know, and I'll just reiterate, Tucker asked that question, you know, basically, would you use nukes? And he looked at him, and just the look, the facial expression was like, are you nuts? He's like, I'm not suicidal here. I like my life. He knows, like, he unleashes nukes in the nuclear war and we're all dead. He doesn't want to end the whole world. He wants to take over the world. So, I mean, that's the exact opposite of what he's trying to accomplish. So I don't think he's going to use nukes, folks. And like you said, maybe if we blast him and NATO is going to start to use nukes and stuff, maybe it could happen. Maybe AI takes over, you know, and grabs their nukes or something like that. What was that movie in the 80s? Remember the movie in the 80s where, what was it,
War Games.
Oh, I'm dating myself. War Games. You knew it. War Games.
Is that
remember
right?
The computer takes over and it's going to launch a missile?
Threw a random guess out there, but yeah.
That's a great movie, War Games. The computer takes over, and it actually is going to launch the missile, and they're trying to shut the computer off. That's probably the bigger risk, is that the AI somehow gets a hold of the missiles and the nukes, and it launches them. There's a bigger risk that AI launches the nukes than Putin launching the nukes, in my opinion.
I couldn't watch that interview with Putin and Tucker Carlson, not for any, you know, media, you know, blackout or, you know, having anything against them, but just because it was 2 hours long, I'm not going to watch a 2 hour long
interview. Too long.
Yeah, I mean, come on, I'm a Spark Notes guy. Give me the Spark Notes. What was
that?
Biggest...
was it? The notes, the short term notes is no nuclear war imminent.
And Tucker likes the grocery stores there. That's basically all you
did. That's already dead.
Yeah, he went to the grocery store and he was like, look how amazing this is. You put a coin in and get a cart. And it's like, all right, he's never been to Aldi, clearly. all right, coming up at 9 a.m., you guys got any final thoughts for us for the day?
Choppy, digesting. NVIDIA had a huge day yesterday, was trading up pre-market. People are like, it's going back to the highs. Well, nothing goes straight up, nothing goes straight down. I think what you're going to have is a lot of chop. fade trade maybe wins today, where you get it around. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, no, no, it's pulling back. Oh, no, no, here we go. Oh, no, no, it's pulling back. I think the fade trade today. Contrarians win today.
I'm just looking, you know, we're trading flat here. So I'd like to see us, you know, establish a bid, you know, above the close. Keep an eye on your closing prices. Things were green nicely earlier. S&Ps, we did make that all-time closing high yesterday, but I don't want to call a double top from yesterday and today's high before, you know, only at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. But that's what you're looking at. Kind of a lazy day. It'd be very impressive just to, you know, hold on to those gains from yesterday and post another new all-time closing high in the S&P. IWM, I mean, I don't want to ignore it. It broke out over, over that 205 area. Now it's come back to it. Let's see if it can find a bid. Bonds are not really helping it out today.
Yeah, no economic data scheduled today. We mentioned a few earnings coming after the close, but nothing crazy. No huge earnings this morning either. So who knows? I mean, it could be the first, you know, quiet day on the street in a while. We'll see. But the volatility, the chop has been there. So we'll see if that continues. We do have live trading started in a couple minutes. This stream will redirect you there. Please smash the like if you haven't already. And if you're watching on Twitter, give us a follow. We'll be back 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. We'll be right back.